Welcome to the Deep Dive, your essential shortcut to staying well-informed on the pulse of commercial real estate. Today, we're cutting through the noise, distilling the most impactful developments from the last 8 days. That's August 8th through 15th, 2025. Our mission is really to highlight what's truly significant, especially for those of you navigating the dynamic Dallas-Fort Worth market and more broadly, the evolving retail sector. As your guides from Eureka Business Group, we're here to help you unpack these critical shifts.
Indeed. And the overarching narrative from this past week, it really points to a clear, accelerating recovery momentum across commercial real estate. We're seeing major industry players not just cautiously optimistic, but actually raising their outlooks. We'll be connecting these compelling national trends directly to what's happening on the ground here, especially in key markets like DFW.
Okay, let's dive right into this broad CRE recovery then, because our sources, they paint a pretty clear picture of strengthening markets. What truly stands out immediately as we look at the big picture?
Well, what's particularly compelling, I think, is that for the first time since 2020, all five major CRE services companies, you know, CBRE, JLL, Cushman & Wakefield, Colliers, and Newmark, they all increased their financial outlooks in the same quarter simultaneously. That's not just a ripple of optimism. It's more like a wave.
Yeah.
Suggests a really profound and widespread shift in market sentiment. It definitely points to a more robust recovery than maybe many might have anticipated even just a few months ago.
That's a powerful observation. Yeah. So with all five of these major firms raising their outlooks, it feels like the big money, those institutional investors, they must finally be shaking off that wait-and-see approach we've talked about for so long. Are they finally jumping back in?
You've hit on something essential there. They absolutely are. This recovery, I mean, even despite elevated interest rates, it's largely fueled by institutional investors finally unleashing their dry powder. That's a record. $350 billion in capital, specifically earmarked for real estate investments that had just been waiting on the sidelines. Blackstone, for instance, leads the pack. An astounding $177 billion in global capital ready to go. So this influx has ignited some pretty intense competition for quality deals. It's creating what Joseph Biasi over at Newmark, he's head of commercial capital markets research there, he calls it a seller's market for prime assets.
Uh-huh.
You know, equity funds want to deploy, but they need the right deals.
Right. Makes sense. And drilling down on market stability, there's a fascinating update from Brookfield Property Partners that tells us a lot about the broader health of these big portfolios, doesn't it? They reported a dramatically smaller net loss in Q2 2025, down to $46 million from, what, $789 million a year earlier? That's quite a turnaround.
That's exactly right. A huge swing. And it indicates that the downturn may have finally bottomed out, perhaps even for some of the hardest hit asset classes. Those losses have really eased thanks to, well, modest value upticks and some proactive asset sales. It's a stark contrast to the steep write-downs we were seeing just a year ago. And looking at the broader implications, we're also witnessing a boom in the real estate secondary market. Transactions where investors buy or sell positions in real estate private equity funds. They totaled a record $102 billion in the first half of 2025.
$102 billion.
Yeah, a significant jump from $74 billion in H1 2024.
So this secondary market, it's effectively giving investors an escape hatch, like a release valve they didn't really have before. How profound is that shift for the underlying risk profile of private equity real estate?
Oh, it's truly profound. It really allows investors like pensions and endowments to, you know, cash out of fund investments early rather than waiting potentially years for a fund to liquidate. It's no longer just an option for distress situations. It's now seen as, and I'm quoting here, a permanent part of the real estate investment life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Provides crucial liquidity and flexibility for CRE investors. It really changes the game for how people view those long-term commitments in private real estate.
Okay, let's peel back the layers on retail real estate now. That's a key focus for many of you listeners, especially in a market like Dallas-Fort Worth. What are the latest investment numbers revealing about this sector?
Well, investment in U.S. retail property actually surpassed historical averages in the first half of this year. Investment volumes surged 23% year over year, reached $28.5 billion in H1 2025. That actually exceeds the long-term historical first half average, which was around $27.7 billion. Now, it didn't quite hit the H1 2022 peak, but it's notably higher than both 2023 and 2024. This isn't just a strong signal of confidence. It's kind of a statement that retail is really evolving beyond its old challenges.
That's fantastic news. What's fundamentally different about this wave of investment compared to, say, pre-pandemic interest? And what are we seeing in terms of, you know, new construction and vacancies?
Good question. It seems to be driven by a focus on resilience and necessity. Think grocery-anchored centers, experiential retail. And one crucial aspect to consider is why there's such high demand for existing spaces. New retail construction groundbreakings in H1 2025, just 4.9 million square feet. That's down 50% from a year ago.
Wow, half.
Yeah. High construction costs simply mean new development often isn't justified by the current achievable rents. Meanwhile, vacancies have held remarkably steady nationwide at a low 4.3%. In fact, we saw approximately 6,600 store openings in the first half, outpacing about 5,600 closings. That indicates real resilience, especially since most of those store openings are in smaller footprints, you know, under 10,000 square feet.
And maybe the most surprising positive sign, I thought, was how quickly retail spaces are being released. The average downtime between a store closure and a new lease is now just 7 months. That's the shortest lag in over two decades. That's incredibly fast.
It truly is. Really reflects a dynamic, adaptive market. And if we look at the major players, Simon Property Group, the largest U.S. mall owner, they're also demonstrating significant strength. They're issuing $1.5 billion in senior debts, mainly to refinance existing loans. But despite this debt raise, Simon's enjoying what they call a strong resurgence. Q2 2025 revenue was $1.5 billion. That's up 2.8% year over year, and occupancy ticked up to 96%.
96%? That's strong.
Very strong. They even raised their full-year funds from operations, or FFO, guidance, which is a key metric for REITs, sort of like earnings, indicating their operational profitability and, well, their confidence.
Okay, and for the entire retail sector, there's a development that really caught our eye. Amazon, they're dramatically ramping up their grocery delivery business, right? Expanding same-day service to 1,000 more U.S. cities this year, with plans to double coverage to 2,300 cities by the end of 2025. This move certainly sent ripples through the stock prices of traditional supermarket chains.
What's truly astonishing here is the sheer scale of Amazon's ambition and how it really blurs the lines between logistics and retail real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon commanded, get this, 474 million square feet of U.S. industrial and logistics space as of Q1 2025. With another 50 million square feet in its pipeline, they're leveraging this vast network, along with their, what, roughly 600 owned grocery stores, Whole Foods, Amazon Fresh locations. They're using it all to win a bigger slice of Americans' grocery spend. Basically, they're using their warehouses as de facto local retail hubs for rapid delivery. It challenges traditional storefronts and kind of redefines what retail space truly means in this era.
Yeah, absolutely. Zooming into our home state of Texas, we saw retail activity like the sale of that 51,030-square-foot Conroe Shopping Center near Houston, shadow-anchored by Kroger. This reflects continued investor interest in those grocery-anchored retail properties, especially in growing suburban markets. This is a segment we at Eureka Business Group know very well, especially tracking it here in DFW.
That's a powerful example, yes. And relevant to the DFW area itself, the recent sale of an 80-room Holiday Inn Express in Plano. It's strategically located along the Dallas North Tollway near the Shops at Legacy major corporate facilities. It really exemplifies the strong appeal of suburban hotel markets that benefit directly from vibrant retail and employment centers nearby. This kind of robust activity, it just continues to underscore the strength we're seeing in our local market here.
Okay, let's pivot slightly, moving away from retail for a moment. Let's touch on the office sector. We've heard so many mixed signals there. What does the latest sentiment survey tell us? Is there any good news?
Actually, yes, some good news for the office market. CBRE's 2025 America's Office Occupier Sentiment Survey, it indicates a cautious but definite optimism. A significant 67% of office-using companies expect to either grow or at least maintain their office footprint over the next 3 years. That's a pretty stark reversal from 2023 when, you know, the majority were looking to downsize. It does beg the question, though. Who is driving this change?
It seems to be mainly small and mid-sized businesses driving it, right? Companies with under 500 employees accounted for over half of all U.S. office leasing transactions in the first half of 2025. And a whopping 96% of them plan to maintain or expand space. That seems like a clear contrast to many larger corporations still looking to consolidate.
That's absolutely correct. That's where the growth is coming from. And there's a very distinct flight to quality trend happening alongside it. Despite a national office vacancy rate near 19%, which, let's be clear, is still a record high, desirable prime buildings, the ones in amenity-rich, walkable locations, they're much tighter. Their vacancy rates are over 4 percentage points lower than Class B or C spaces. Companies are definitely trading up to newer or renovated buildings to, well, entice staff back. And that strategy, it appears to be working as return to office rates continue to climb, albeit slowly.
Interesting. What about co-working spaces? They've been so dynamic in recent years. Is that trend still holding strong or is it cooling off?
Well, after years of really breakneck expansion, the U.S. co-working sector did hit a bit of a speed bump in Q2 2025. We saw the first net drop in locations since at least 2023. However, what's particularly compelling here, I think, is that there are early signs of maybe a second act for co-working. And this time, it's driven by large corporate clients, enterprise users. They're embracing flex space as part of their, post-pandemic occupancy strategy. They value the scalability, the short-term commitment, the cost control over those rigid long-term leases.
Okay, so co-working isn't dead. It's just maturing, evolving, focusing more on larger corporate clients instead of just individuals or small startups. How much of a game changer is this for the entire flexible office market, do you think?
It's a huge shift.
Yeah.
We're seeing a real bifurcation in the market. This hybrid approach, a smaller core office lease supplemented by satellite co-working memberships, that's expected to propel the next wave of industry growth. It should provide more stability for operators too, having those larger, more stable enterprise clients. The critical question for many companies now isn't if they'll use co-working, but maybe how much they'll integrate it into their overall real estate strategy.
Right. Okay, now shifting to the industrial sector. It's certainly been booming. And for those of you focused on DFW, there's a particularly intriguing development right in our backyard. Some familiar faces starting something new.
Indeed, yes. Three well-known Dallas-Fort Worth real estate executives have teamed up to form Eider Creek. It's a new Dallas-based industrial investment and development firm. And they've already launched with two DFW projects, including the 468,000 square foot Mountain Creek East Logistics Center right here in Dallas. This really highlights the immense confidence in our local market, particularly from seasoned local entrepreneurs.
And that confidence seems well-placed, doesn't it, given DFW's standing as a major logistics hub?
Oh, absolutely. Dallas-Fort Worth currently leads the nation in industrial construction. Over 28 million square feet underway as of May. That represents nearly 3% of the existing inventory.
Still leading.
Tenant demand remains really robust thanks to continued e-commerce growth, corporate relocations, you name it. This new venture, Eider Creek, it just exemplifies how Texas's commercial real estate entrepreneurs are doubling down on industrial, really leveraging DFW's strategic position.
So staying in Texas, what does this all mean for Fort Worth specifically? Maybe beyond just industrial growth. We're seeing a significant shift in its identity, aren't we?
Yeah, in a true Texas-sized Hollywood move, as they say. Mm-hmm. Yellowstone co-creator Taylor Sheridan has partnered with Hillwood, Ross Perot Jr.'s real estate firm. They're launching SGS Studios, a 450,000 square foot film and TV studio complex in Fort Worth's Alliance, Texas development. And they're already planning an additional 300,000 square feet and 8 more sound stages. It's massive. What's truly fascinating here is that this expansion seems largely fueled by Texas's beefed up film incentives. The state legislature allocated $300 million every 2 years for the Texas Moving Image Industry Incentive Program.
That's a huge increase, aimed directly at luring more big budget projects to Texas, right? Sheridan is apparently openly positioning Fort Worth as an ideal alternative to Los Angeles, citing ample land and business-friendly policies.
It is a huge increase, yes. And it's a remarkable transformation for Fort Worth's image and economy. This venture really exemplifies how commercial real estate in Texas is diversifying, turning former industrial warehouses into sound stages, leveraging the state's massive growth and now these generous incentives, all to capture a significant slice of the, $100 billion film industry. It's genuinely a new frontier for commercial development here.
Very interesting. Beyond DFW, what else are we seeing in the broader Texas market? Any other notable deals or trends?
Well, Austin, for instance, made a significant public sector investment. They acquired the Barton Skyway office complex for $107.6 million to consolidate city operations. Apparently generates substantial cost savings compared to building new facilities. It reflects a smart strategic use of existing inventory. And while it's not DFW specific for retail, the Blue Collar Commercial Group's 2025 Texas market analysis, it identified the Austin-San Antonio corridor as a premier opportunity zone, particularly for retail and small bay industrial properties, thanks to its really rapid population and economic growth down there.
Okay, let's broaden our perspective now to policy shifts. These could have major, maybe long-term impacts on commercial real estate capital flows.
Right. And one crucial aspect to consider is how political decisions could shape future investment. President Trump's August 7th executive order, it's directing the Labor Department to re-examine ERISA guidance. That's the main law governing retirement plans. They have 180 days. And this could potentially allow 401k retirement plans to invest in alternative assets, including real estate. If that happens, it could open access to, well, $12.2 trillion in U.S. retirement savings for a CRE investment.
$12 trillion? That's a massive potential new capital source. It signals a significant philosophical change in retirement investment regulations, doesn't it? It really opens the door to trillions previously locked out of direct CRE investment.
It certainly does. And that has potentially profound long-term implications for CRE capital flows, fundamentally reshaping the investor landscape. At the same time, sort of on the other side of the policy coin, the EPA's Energy Star program, which, you know, helped over 8,800 commercial buildings save $2.2 billion and prevent 5.7 million metric tons of emissions just in 2024. That program faces potential elimination as part of Trump administration budget cuts. So looking at the broader implications of these policy changes, both the ERISA review and the Energy Star situation, they could create significant structural shifts. Shifts in capital access, property operations, impacting everything from energy efficiency standards to how retirement funds get invested in real estate. Lots to watch there.
Definitely. Okay, finally, let's quickly touch on a key industry tool and some broader economic indicators that came out.
Sure. Altus Group, the Toronto-based company behind the ARG US software, which is, you know, widely used for real estate finance analysis, they're considering putting themselves on the market. Following mounting buyout interest from private equity firms, this makes Altus an attractive target for investors looking to capitalize on the prop tech boom. Highlights the increasing strategic value of data and analytical tools in CRE. And regarding broader economic indicators, employment growth, it decelerated significantly in July, only 73,000 net positions added. And there were large downward revisions to prior month's figures, revealed about 258,000 fewer jobs created than previously reported.
Oof. Okay, so what are the implications of that kind of slowdown for commercial real estate?
Well, when employment growth decelerates like this, businesses tend to pull back, right? Fewer new jobs generally means less demand for new office space. And critically for industrial and retail, it often translated into what we call negative net absorption in Q2. Basically, that means more space was vacated than was leased up during that period. Reflects overall business hesitancy, maybe some space consolidation efforts. So it's definitely a nuanced picture amidst the overall optimism we discussed earlier.
Right, a mix of signals. So let's try to pull it all together. What does this all mean for you, our informed listener? The period from August 7th to 15th, 2025, it really feels like it marked a decisive turning point for U.S. commercial real estate markets. We're seeing institutional investors actively deploying capital, no longer just waiting for rate cuts. It seems like they're resetting the market's trajectory.
That's a crucial point, I think. It demonstrates that CRE markets have, perhaps, adapted to a new normal. A new normal of elevated interest rates, ongoing policy uncertainty. Successful market participants seem to be those embracing the current conditions rather than just delaying decisions. They're identifying opportunities within these evolving landscapes.
Yeah, and we've seen incredible resilience and strategic shifts in retail, fascinating evolutions in office and co-working, and really dynamic, diverse growth right here in the Dallas-Fort Worth market, from industrial expansion to, well, film studio development. This is precisely why we at Eureka Business Group stay so focused on these specific areas. Understanding these granular shifts helps us better guide you.
Absolutely. Understanding these nuanced shifts is just crucial for identifying opportunities, particularly when you're focusing on specific segments and geographies. The focus on quality assets, the strategic adaptation happening across various sectors, and the robust activity in markets like DFW. Those are really the key takeaways from this period.
Okay, so here's a provocative thought for you to mull over as we wrap up. With new retail construction remaining so constrained and demand for existing spaces surging, how will this supply-demand imbalance, especially when coupled with the rise of those smaller store footprints we talked about, how will that fundamentally reshape the value and acquisition strategies for retail properties in high-growth areas like Dallas-Fort Worth over, say, the next 12 to 18 months? That's something to keep a very close eye on. And that's our deep dive for today. We hope this has given you a significant shortcut to being well-informed on the latest in commercial real estate.